It's good to be with you again and to share God's Word with you. As I thought about the three Sundays being here, what passages shall I use to introduce you to some things that the Lord would have you hear? So I thought about two themes. One of them is the one we're going to do in the morning, this morning, next week, and the following week, about what God really delights in. Why does God smile at us, and why does He want us to smile back at Him? The other one is the evening series that I'm planning on the book of Numbers. Not many people probably have heard sermons on the book of Numbers, but there's some very interesting and wonderful details in that book that help us understand, too, how God is our guide on the journey through our Christian life, as He was for the people of Israel. So I'm going to use that for the next three Sundays in the evening service. This morning I have chosen the passage from the book of Job, not so much because I wanted to talk about Job, because the book of Job is a tremendously deep and a very, very challenging book. But at the end of the book comes a very wonderful part that we sometimes read, but we often glance over much of the detail that is there. I want to read from chapter 39, where God introduces the same question He had to Job before that. Do you know? Were you there? And all those kind of questions. And I'm going to read from verse 13 to the end of that chapter, what God introduces to Job and what He wants Job to think about. There God says, the wings of the ostrich flap joyfully, but they cannot compare with the pinions and feathers of the stork. She lays her eggs on the ground and lets them warm in the sand, unmindful that a foot may crush them, that some wild animal may trample them. She treats her young harshly as if they were not hers. She cares not that her labor was in vain. For God did not endow her with wisdom or give her a share of good sense. Yet when she spreads her feathers to run, she laughs at horse and rider. Do you give the horse his strength or clothe his neck with a flowing mane? Do you make him leap like a locust, strike terror with his proud snorting? He paws fiercely, rejoicing in his strength, and charges into the fray. He laughs at fear, afraid of nothing. He does not shy away from the sword. The quiver rattles against his side, and with flashing spear and lance, in frenzied excitement, he eats up the ground. He cannot stand still when the trumpet sounds. At the blast of the trumpet, he shouts, he snorts, aha. He catches the scent of battle from afar, the shout of commanders and the battle cry. Does the hawk take flight by your wisdom and spread his wings toward the south? Does the eagle soar at your command and build his nest on high? He dwells on a cliff and stays there at night. A rocky crag is his stronghold. From there he seeks out his food. His eyes detect it from afar. His young one feasts on blood, and where the slain are, there is he. Wonderful part of the book of Job that introduces us to our God in new ways, in wonderful ways. And the reason for that is that Job had forgotten some of that as he struggled with his problems. And he had some very deep, deep problems. Everybody said that Job was a sinner, and that's why he was having so much trouble. But Job complained to everyone, you're not right. You got it wrong. It's not because I'm a sinner that I am being punished, because I have been faithful to God. I did not do the things that you think I did. And even God remains silent, so he doesn't quite know what's going on. Now, why doesn't God answer the question? We have that sometimes, don't we? Why doesn't God answer our prayers when we say we've got too much rain and we've got enough already? Well, we don't always know what God does and why he does it. And that's why God introduces Job to something that Job needs to know about. You can't pull God down into a courtroom and say, God, you have to explain why you do what you do, or why you don't do what you didn't do. Job can't deal with God that way, because God and he are not in the same league by any means. After all, God is Creator Almighty, the ruler of heaven and earth, and Job is just one of his creatures, a loved one, a special one perhaps, still one of God's creatures. And so God introduces Job to some thoughts to reveal how great and wondrous our God really is. In the words of God, we are to consider wonderful realities about what he has done and why these things are there. They're not there because he wanted to explain what we could do with them, but they're there so that we could know who our Creator is and who receives the glory and the majesty and the wisdom and the praise from all that has been made. And when I open this book and read those last number of chapters, I sense in the reading of that God is delighted to tell Job about this. He's delighted because he's talking about his creation, and it's the creation he loves. That's why he made it. It's his work, and therefore it is filled with delight for him. And in the process of listening to that, we sense that it's also filled with delight for us. We'll get more of that in a moment. There are three areas of this, and they're all kind of intertwined. I can't separate these very well, clearly, logically, because it's about wonder and amazement and glory. So I want to first talk a little bit about the wonder of all those creatures that God has made, and then the beauty of all those creatures that are God's, and then finally the joy that all this contains for both God and for us. The wonder. God's creation is wondrous. Neither Job nor we can truly comprehend how marvelous it really is. But it is good for us to think about that and to look into this wonder, this amazement that is revealed in God's creation. And God says that right here in these chapters 38 to 41. He talks about how great the earth is, just all by itself. Just this one globe that is just one dot in the universe is so wondrous and so marvelous that it contains all the things we need and then some. And it has always been there to demonstrate how great and glorious God is, even when we are not listening or seeing. There's that great power that we all deal with in the sea. Now, we as landlubbers, we probably don't think about that sea very often, but even here in Vermont, you know the power of that sea when the storms come from the sea and destroy the roads in Vermont. It's an amazing thing that all that power is contained in the water that God placed in the buckets called the oceans, and they are at his command, not ours. There's power in the form of snow, or hail, or rain, or lightning, and thunder, and storms. And then there's the mystery of that water. Have you ever think about that? Garrett mentioned it last night at supper, and I said to him, yeah, I'm going to say that for a minute in my message this morning. You think about water. It is the essence of our life. Without water, we cannot live very long at all. We can live without food for quite some time, but without water, we're completely lost. Water is our life. And water is marvelous and miraculous. In fact, I don't know why we don't think about it more often, but it comes in all these forms. Sometimes it's steam, sometimes it's dew, sometimes it comes down in rain, sometimes it comes over in floods. and living streams like rivers, and then it's filled the oceans. And it comes also in the form of something else that we're familiar with, solid as a rock. And you can drive a truck across it if there's enough of it, even if there's still water underneath, ice. Now, why does water form ice? The way it does is because this is one of the nature's, one of the amazing characteristics of water. It expands when it freezes. And so it becomes lighter than water, and it enables creation to live underneath it, which it could not do if ice did not do that. If ice were heavier than water, we would all die because the frozen would become a tremendous frozen pond, and we would not be able to live, nor would anyone else. So there's a marvelous number of mysteries and display of God's wonder in just the things that are right here on the earth. But of course, there's much more than just this earth. There's millions and millions and millions of stars in the heavens and constellations we don't even know about that we're still discovering. All of these things are creatures made by God, not by us. They don't belong to us in the sense that they belong to Him. We may use them because God gives them to us as we need them. They may never become our idols. And we'll talk about that some more too, because people have been doing that, of course, ever since man fell into sin. So here's our first challenge. We need to recapture a sense of wonder, a sense of marvel at the work of our Creator. Just a few examples. Among the birds, I'm not sure if you're a bird watcher or not, but among the birds, there are many different interesting species. One of them is the fulmar. You probably never heard of it. I didn't know about it either very much. It's a relative of the albatross, which has that's the biggest bird we know. It's 11 feet of wingspan. But the fulmar is a shorter version of that, so to speak, a cousin of the albatross. But what's interesting about this bird is that he hardly ever comes to shore. He's always out in the ocean. You wonder, how does he live out there? Well, he eats fish and he drinks salt water. Salt water for a bird? He would die. But God has given that bird the special ability to desalinate the water he swallows and expels the salt back into the ocean. No other bird can do that. This one does. And he comes to, or she comes to shore just occasionally to build a nest, have young and then get back to the ocean. There's another bird that is very common in our Western circles and Western world, the hemisphere of the West. It's the hummingbird. You know how many species of hummingbirds are in the Western Hemisphere? Over 300. All different kinds of hummingbird, from a real tiny little one to a very, very good sized one. But what, again, is interesting about the hummingbird is how quick his wings move. And you, how many times a second can you do this with your hand? Count them. How many times? You get to 3 or 4 at the most. I don't think I can even do 2. But the hummingbird, you know what the hummingbird does when it hovers above the flowers? It has its wings beating. How many times do you think per second those wings move? Well, when it's just hovering, it's 55 times a second. But when he flies, it goes up to 75. 75 times a second, he does this. And then there's this marvel. Have you ever seen the hummingbird because he is courting another bird, you know, another hummingbird? The male goes up and down like this. Have you ever seen that? I've been surrounded by one time in our backyard. He was going like this and like this with tremendous speed. I could hardly keep my eye on him. And at that time, the wings of the hummingbird are beating 200 times a second. That's amazing. That's just utterly amazing. How could some little bird like that have that much power in its wings and the muscles in its breast to do that? Well, because God made him that way. Because God delights in those kind of things that he has done that no one else can really fully understand. In Florida, we have trees that are extremely important to the ecology of the area. Any of the tropical world, subtropical world, has mangroves. And if it weren't for mangrove trees, Florida would just become a desert. It's the mangrove trees that keep the storms at bay and protect all the shorelines of the area. Now, mango trees grow in right along the shore. There are two or three different kinds, and two kinds of them have their roots all in the brackish water and salt water. And again, we say, how can a plant survive above water drinking salt water? Well, once again, God has given the mangrove tree the ability to drink up, soak up the salt water and excrete the salt through its leaves where the rain washes it back into the water and it lives on the desalinated water that it has drunk. Can you imagine how a plant can do that? I don't know. But this is what God has made, even just in our own environment. What a wonderful thing that we can think about stuff like that. Some years ago when we were here, I brought a bunch of my shells, and some of you saw some samples of that, because I collected many seashells in the Philippines. And again, it's one of those strange things that God has made. All of the shells that I have are beautiful, shiny. They all participate certain characteristics. The cowries, for example, are all smooth and glossy, and they are so wonderful that people have used them for generations upon generations in many countries as money. They just pick them up from the sea and use them as money because they're so beautiful. But the shells all have this in common too. They grow by turning, and they grow and they turn like the hands on the clock, clockwise direction, always clockwise. All of them, all around the world, they all do the same thing. They grow by going clockwise, except one or two or three species that do just the opposite. The Florida lightning whelk is one of them. I've got several examples from the Philippines too. But they grow by going left, counterclockwise. And we say, God, why? How in the world does this species know that it wants to go this way rather than that way? And I don't know. And our scientists don't know either. They don't know why. But it does, because this is God's creation, not ours. There's very interesting things that we can see in creation, and it should make us wonder. That is with the W-A spelling, wonder, but wonder, W-O. Wondering at what God has done, amazing. But there's also great beauty in the creation of God. Beauty that points Job back to God to make him see how glorious God is because of what of his glory is evident in the things that he has made. And we all know about this. Look up in the sky on a very clear night. Can you not be amazed at the glory that is up there in the stars or the moon or whatever you may be looking at in the sky? God talks about that in these chapters too. He even names some of the stars in the sky, like Pleiades and Orion. There's a sheer power and the glory of wild animals. Like God uses quite a few examples in these chapters. The wild donkey, for example. The sheer strength of that animal and what he can do. Or the glory of what was in our passage too. The eagle that flies up there and lives so high yet can see way down below what he wants to catch or pick up. I'm sure that many of you also have examples of this in your daily life. And if you don't, you should make some. You should search for some. What kind of things do you enjoy when you look at nature that God has made? A sunset? climb the hill behind the church and go on the porch of the pastor on a Sunday evening and look out over New York and you see the glory of the sunset. Or cloud formations in the sky. Make it a game. See how many shapes and forms you can find in the beautiful white clouds that float along as you're out and walking in the field. Or perhaps other things like flowers or animals. There are many, many, many areas of God's creation that cry for us to see what God has done. Christians should be eager to do that. And I'm very sorry to have to say that there are many Christians who still think that God's creation isn't all that important. That after all, God's going to take us out of here anyway, so why bother with it? But that's not true, and you know it. It's not true because this creation is God and He will redeem it, not destroy it. Take a walk in a park. Walk out by the riverfront or along the shores of a lake. See the intricate beauty of flowers or insects, mammals, waves, the sand, the moon, the stars, wherever you want to look. Take a look at the big things, the mountains you have out here in New York, as well as in Vermont and New Hampshire, and see the glory of the skyline itself, which remarks, of course, of the greatness of our God. But also the small stuff, you know, the web of a spider, or a bunch of ants busy doing their job, or the tiny fingers and toes of a brand new baby. You ever wonder how glorious that is? Five on each hand, five on each foot. Tiny little things that become long fingers and strong toes years to come. All because this is a creature of our God. There's also a lot of beauty in the sound of creation. What do you hear? What do you hear? God has given us hearing as well as eyes to listen to His creation. And the ears tell us of the beauty of the song of a bird, or the cry, the wild cry in distress of a hyena, or perhaps the howling of the wind on a stormy night, or the crashing of the waves against the shoreline or against the side of a boat. Whatever it may be, these are sounds that create beauty in our sense of who has done all that to make it possible for us to hear. Then there is mystery. And I don't know of anything greater mystery than how God has created for us the elements that make up the creation we know. That's the only ones we know. And we have them all on a tab and big tables, you know, in the chemistry class you learn about the elements and what they all are and their numbers and so forth. I don't remember all of them anymore from my high school chemistry class. But one of the things that's amazing about it is these elements as atoms combine with one another or with themselves. And it all depends on what element it is that is combining with other elements, what kind of stuff we get as a result. Take the simplest one that most of you know about. There's water, H2O. If you take, however, H2O and separate the O and in its place put a C, carbon, you get an entirely different thing. Or even with carbon, which is one of the most remarkable elements in our makeup, even in our own makeup, carbon combines very accurately with very many different types of situation and geometric designs that are very complicated sometimes, can get up to very, 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 very many atoms all in one molecule, and then we get complicated products. Most of them are related to what you produce in the farm, like methane, and the other one is ethyl, and then another one is benzene, and another one is alcohol. They're all made of the same stuff, but in different shapes and forms of the molecules, and all made by the same carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen atoms. Same that is in all the other things, including what we breathe and drink. Amazing, isn't it? All because God created it to be possible this way to have all the things that make up the creation throughout the universe. Scientists know all about this, but often just take it for granted. Of course, that's the way it is. But I don't think a Christian can just take it for granted. It's taking it as God's gift and wonder at how it could be so marvelously consistent and beautiful in its structure. So we have mystery and wonder. And then finally, there's also great joy. And here is where Job's examples are remarked. God says to Job, where were you, or were you present, or did you do the following things? For example, the birth of fawns from a deer out in the forest. She was there. She gave birth to two beautiful fawns, and there was no one there to help her except God. Or how about that horse? Fearless in his speed, tremendous in his power, glorious in his majesty. It's a creature of God. And then there is that silly ostrich. Why does God put this in the book? Have you ever thought about that? Why did this one get in here somehow? What's an ostrich have to do with God's glory and the joy that he has in it? An ostrich is a silly bird. Even God says so. He says, I did not give her wisdom. I kept her from being so smart. So she dumps her eggs and doesn't mind what happens to her young. She can't fly. She's got two wings, but she doesn't fly. But wow, when she starts to run, watch out. She can go. So God says to, don't you understand, Job? What I do is for my joy in my creatures. So once in a while, instead of having all the shells go this way, I made a few to go the other way, just to keep you on your toes, to make you think, why? Why does an ostrich have so much speed? Why? She's big enough to take on almost anybody. She certainly doesn't need speed to escape her enemies, but she has it. Why? God knows. And you know what? He laughs. He said, look at my silly ostrich. That's one of my creatures too. That's beautiful. I think that's just marvelous that we can say that about God's creation. It doesn't have to be beautiful according to our sense, because then a lot of people would say, it isn't beautiful, it's ugly. Well, I know a lot of shells that are quite ugly. They don't appeal to us as beauty. And yet they are beautiful because of what God has done for that particular little animal inside. And so we may well consider how gorgeous indeed God's creation is, because he is the one who delights in it. He delights in what he has made. And we often think that the whole creation is kind of static, that it doesn't really change, or it's just made once and God let it go. No. The creation is alive and moving. It's giving praise to God. It's singing his praises. It's singing his glory. And it continually changes as well. There's always movement and direction and growth. Always. Even the things that we think are always constant change and move. Even the clock, the time, is not exactly always the same. We don't think about that because it's so close to being the same that we can set our watch at it and say it'll be the same tomorrow as it is today. But we know that in essence it's not really that way. Even scientists have discovered that the speed of light and the nature of the distances between the heavenly bodies and all that involves with the movement of the stars and so on bends the light as well as the time. Bends it, changes it a little bit because of the forces of nature that God has placed in the universe. So much so that it takes an Einstein to even think out the problem. Most of us don't have enough power up here to think that through. I don't, I know that. So there's great joy for God in what he made because it's also very much stamped by his ownership. It's his creation. So there are some things that we need to do. We need to be more aware of how God delights in the things that He has done, the things that He has made, the things that belong to Him. And that's both in creation as well as in redemption. So this is the great marvel of it all, though, and that is this, that in relationship to that, there are only two of God's creatures that understand this at all, the angels and human beings. Take a look at the salmon. They swim upstream and they come to the rapids. You know how they can jump up there and they can go right up that rapids or that waterfall. But I don't think it ever happens that as we are peeking down into that water and see those beautiful fish swimming upstream, I don't think it ever happens that one salmon says to the other, "Look at that beautiful blonde up there. I've never seen such a gorgeous head of blonde hair. Have you?" No. But we look and say, "Look at the size of that salmon, will you? And look at the color on its back." We do that because we have the ability to delight with God in the creatures He has made. And that's a special gift to us. That's why God reveals all this, because he wants us to join Him in delighting in the things that He has done. And that brings greater joy and happiness to our God. So we praise Him because of who He is and what He has done, and that He has shared it with us and tells us, "Come with me. Come with me and let me show you what a wonderful world, what a wonderful cosmos that belongs to me, because it's going to be yours forever." Did you know God will restore all of creation to its original intent? And then when that happens, heaven and earth will be together and we will live with God in that universe, and it will be ours to explore in all its detail. Even then, we will still be marveling at how marvelous it really is. But we will have the joy of seeing it anew and afresh in the kingdom to come. So there are two things remaining. One of them is that we may never take anything in this creation and say to it, "You are more important to me than God is." Nothing. No animals. No things, no gold, no silver, no other human being, no angel even can become our God. Because as soon as we do that, we destroy our relationship with our Heavenly Father. The second thing that we may not do is to abuse or neglect or to pollute or to in some way destroy what He has made, as if it doesn't make any difference. We are stewards of God's creation, even the one that is here now, because it is His, not ours. And we use it because He permits us to be stewards of that creation. And since He has in mind that it will be redeemed and restored, just like He does that with human beings, we don't have the right to destroy the soul of another human being. We also do not have the right to destroy or pollute or in any way do damage to God's creatures. Now, some God's creatures are pests to us. I understand that. And we try to protect ourselves from that wherever we can. But we don't simply just wipe them off the face of the earth. When we do, we often have many very bad consequences. The same thing with God's storms and God's rainy season or God's dry seasons. We have no way to control that. And if we could, we probably wouldn't do a very good job of it anyway. So we need to be sure that we understand that God's creation is not to be abused, but it's to be wondered at, to be enjoyed, to be happy about, because it reflects who our God is for us. If He cares that much, if He cares that much for even the ostrich or the shell that goes the wrong way, according to the majority opinion, if He cares that much for even that little ant or that spider who builds the nest. If he cares that much, then don't you think he cares also for Job? That's of course what Job has to come and listen to. Ah, if God loves his creation that much, then he must love me an awful lot. And that's true, isn't it? If he cares that much, as Jesus said that, if God, our Heavenly Father, takes so much interest that every sparrow is in his hand, and if the sparrow dies, it's not because God failed, because God's will is there too. That's why we can say he loves us that much and more, because he sent his Son to redeem the whole thing, all of creation, including, especially, us human beings who have made a mess of it so often. And then it will be okay. Then it will be finally, truly singing God's praises, and we will be filled with his delight in all his creatures.